Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I got nutmegged really badly by a kid and it shocked me. From that point on, trained every day to get revenge.
You ended up becoming a world panna champion.
So then I started posting and then I started to get noticed because what I did was very different.
Remind us of some of the players that you've filmed with.
Pogba, Eden Hazard,
Bale,
Gareth Bale.
And you nutmegged Neymar.
Yes, everyone else stepped aside.
Amazing.
And it was just me v him and then, yeah, I got him.
So go on, out of all of them, best techers?
I'd say...
I can't talk about your story without talking about your horrific injury.
I had a litre and a half of blood in my abdomen.
A litre and a half of blood in your abdomen?
My liver had completely exploded. The only thought that came into my head is I'm dying. I was in a coma, but they were ready to operate. The blood congealed. It's a miracle.
Wow.
I had 92 staples.
Your life then got pretty positive.
2 months later was the World Champs and I went and I...
If you had that as a script for a movie, you wouldn't believe it was true. Hello, welcome back to another episode of Inside the Industry Unfiltered with myself, Adam Smith. Delighted to say joining me on the podcast today, Jack Downer, aka Street Panner, a man with over a million subscribers and of course two-time World Panner Champion. And this boy has an incredible story to tell. Jack, firstly, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me, bro. It's a pleasure. Long time coming.
I know, yeah, it has been. Now, your story, there are some incredible highs and some incredible lows as well. And I know that you're happy to talk in quite honest and open way. So thank you very much for coming on. Before we get into sort of what happened and the highs and the lows, tell us about how your love for panna started. And also tell us what panna is for those that might not be aware.
Yeah, very good question. Panna is essentially the 1v1 of football. So if it was me versus you at world level, we'd be in a cage.
You'd 3 minute
match. I would hope. 3 minute match.
Yeah.
Most goals wins or a nutmeg is an instant knockout, yeah. Otherwise known as a panna. I discovered that at 14 following some injuries. I played normal football, just had some minor injuries with my ankle and was pretty unlucky.
Yeah.
And then at that point, my mum pushed me to go to a local club. There was a panna coach, Yofi.
Wow.
And he knew about panna from Holland.
Yeah.
And no one at the time knew about panna.
Yeah, it's big over
the UK.
There, isn't it?
It's massive.
Yeah.
And at that point, there was maybe about 5 people that really played panna in the UK. And I got nutmegged really badly by a kid that also went to my school. And it shocked me. And from that point on, trained every day to get revenge. Week later, went back, got revenge, nutmegged him. And at that point, I found out that there was the tournaments. And not only did I love the sport, I loved football, but this felt more expressive. It felt more like something that belonged to me, that I could really tailor. And I liked the fact that if I put the hours in, I'd succeed. Whereas sometimes an 11-a-side, you know, I could have a terrible game, but we win. Or I could have a great game and we lose.
The team effort.
Exactly.
The team aspect to it, you mean?
100%. Yeah. Whereas this, because it was 1v1, this was all on me.
Yeah.
And that fascinated me. I found out there was world championships. No UK player had ever got to knockout stages of that. And a year well, yeah, it was a year later, I got top 32 in Europe, top 32 in the world at 15, 16.
Wow.
And then carried on from there. So trained every day for 9 years following that.
There's a lot to dissect from that. So I commented recently on you playing a level side game, and you've got a bit in your locker, to be fair. So what level did you play at prior to finding Panna as a footballer?
Yeah, so I started football late. I started at 10. Which was super late.
Yeah.
And I just enjoyed it on the playground and thought, you know what, I'll go to a team.
Yeah.
And I kick about with my dad here and there, but the first team I went to, the first team I went to was called Trinity. They were quite good in the local area.
Yeah.
Division one. I got bullied out of it first training session. Even the manager told me not to come back, which I thought was crazy. Then went to the worst team in Division three, but we lost every game that season. By the end of the season, I went back to Trinity. By the end of that season, I was like one of their better players. Mm. And then we were doing really well for the school. So we kept coming. We came top eight in nationals, won the Kent Cup 2 years in a row. I was getting looked at by Charlton, Tottenham, West Ham.
Wow.
So that was going quite well. Coming down to Kent.
You were being scouted by pro teams.
Yeah, being scouted. They were coming down to Kent. I was a really straightforward right back at the time. Never left the halfway line. It was a completely different game.
Yeah,
no skills in the locker at all. Just tenacious and focused. And then Charlton were going to give me a chance. And that was when my dad was talking to him about education going forward.
Yeah.
Do I think anything would have came of it? Truthfully, no. But did it mean everything to me at the time? Yes. But it was just as those talks were going on, final game of the season, got injured.
Right.
And that was when talks evaporated.
You found your love for Panna then, effectively.
Exactly. And I lost a lot of love for 11-a-side because it was very cutthroat. Mm. I came back fully fit after the injury. They said, no, we were taking a gamble on you anyway. And I was like, wow. Like, that hit me at 14. Yeah. And knew I had to get back into something, and my mum pushed me, and thankfully we found Panna.
That's amazing that, because I've been in a Panna cage. I've played, and it's obviously I back myself as a decent-ish footballer back in there, but it's a very different skill, isn't it?
It's completely
You can
different.
Be very good at football but not good at Panna, and vice versa.
100%. There's many top Panna players that have never played conventional football.
Really?
Never at all.
Wow.
Yeah. And there's obviously many footballers that have never played Panna.
Yeah.
For me, what I've always aimed to do is I quickly realised on social media that the Panna audience was only, it was pretty small at the time, whereas conventional football was massive. And I loved this sport and I wanted to spread it to the masses. So I've tried to keep my football level decent.
Yeah.
And I've been working on that as well, especially my small-sided. I play for England 3v3s and 4v4. I want to try and get into even bigger, maybe 6-a-side would be pretty cool one day. But for now, I think trying to do both is what has allowed me to spread Panna to the masses.
Yeah.
And now most kids under 15 in the UK know what Panna is.
Yeah, so that's largely down to you as well and your success, which we'll come on to. I'm intrigued to know who your influences were. Like, were they technical players, I'm guessing?
Yeah, I mean, within 11-a-side, I loved Ronaldinho.
Yeah,
he was the exact reason that I started football.
Yeah.
So my dad was a boxer and he was always training in the gym when I was with him, and I never wanted to box. And I would just watch on the office computer YouTube, and Ronaldinho came up. There was a flat football under the desk, and that's when I went outside, started kicking it against the wall.
Yeah.
I learned how to do an elastical or a flip-flap before I learned how to pass properly.
Did you?
Yeah, it was always ingrained
that's
in me.
That's amazing.
But Ronaldinho was the inspiration for football. Then 11-a-side, then within Panna, there was a lot of inspirations. Many leading players there who I'm now lucky enough to be competing against and friends with. But the biggest inspiration overall, athletically, was always my dad, because he was always training and he was working 2-3 jobs and still going to boxing, still fighting. And I went to a lot of his fights when I was from about the age of 6 to 12, I think. And I was with him when he won the IBA unlicensed world title.
Oh, wow. And he boxed at a really good level.
Yeah, it was unlicensed, but it was a really high level at the time. And the circuit was quite different to now. And he's an amazing boxer. And he couldn't turn pro because of his age and a variety of things in his life. But technically, he's always been, in my eyes at least, a league above.
And maybe that's where you get your competitive drive from, the fact that you've gone to compete at a high level, if your dad has probably in the blood,
right? And it's also, I'd say, the appreciation for being dedicated, for being focused, for being tenacious. I've always had very high standards on that. And it was never pushed onto me, but I've always seen it in my dad and wanted to emulate it.
Yeah.
And I'd say that's the basis for that.
I love that. It's amazing you say Ronaldinho. So I was lucky enough to do a shoot with Sky where I went to AC Milan's training centre back then. And that was when they had Ronaldinho, Seedorf, Didier. It was incredible.
Pirlo.
I don't know if Robinho was there at the time, but it was that era.
Wow.
And it was watching, effectively, we were doing a behind the scenes of a training day. And he was just literally There was a gym session. Everyone's doing gym weights. He was just juggling a ball the whole time. Didn't seem to do any
didn't lift gym any
work
weights
at all. But the technique he had was unbelievable. Wow. I remember saying to my cameraman at the time, just focus on Ronaldinho because they're just doing bench press. And he's like juggling a tennis ball, like catching his neck. You'd have loved it. It was honestly insane.
The dream.
Like the Showboat King and stuff.
I've probably watched that. I'll try
and dig it out. It was a long time ago, but I was just blown away by the technical ability that he had.
He
looked like someone that would just practice with anything rather do you know what I mean by that? I can't imagine him staying behind doing shooting drills, but I can imagine him always juggling a ball, if that makes sense. And exactly that smile on his face. So it's amazing how you just sort of wrapped that story up. You wanted to get revenge on a mate, but then you ended up becoming a world panna champion, which you sort of brushed through quite quickly. So how do you go from literally having one coach and nutmegging your mate to becoming the best in the world? And how long was that journey?
It was 9 years.
Wow.
So I trained every day. I'm pretty sure it was 9 years. It might have been. Yeah, no, I think it was 9 years.
If you don't mind me asking, when you say train every day, what aspects are you actually training?
So with the ball, my rules for training, I had this from when I was very young. I had a notebook and I would record the hours I trained within the notebook. And for me to put one line, which was 1 hour, I had to train on my own with no distractions for an hour. And I wanted to keep the streak of every day, just because that's how I was. And I would play with my club. I'd play, because I still played 11-a-side.
Technical stuff you're talking about.
Yeah,
so like...
but I'd play at lunch. I'd play with my mates. I'd play after school. But I had to find time on my own. Mm. And that was me and the ball. And there was a lot of movements in Panna that you can learn and dissect. And I remember I didn't have internet on my phone at the time. And I would be in the house and I'd get it up on my mum's phone. I'd film it on my phone. The screen.
Yeah.
I'd go outside. I'd watch it, and I'd try and go slow mo with it.
Right. So you'd replicate videos you see on YouTube.
So it's just footwork every day.
Yeah.
For the first year and a half.
Yeah.
Then I was trying to persuade people to play against me. No one really wanted to play or get nutmegged. So then it was a matter of, okay, I've got to train some people. So I took some of my friends and I trained them, and they trained with me every day. And in fact, when I won the first world title, my best friend, who'd never played panna before, was in the final against me.
Really?
Yeah. So we got, that's how much we trained together.
Because he helped you with your dream, and realized that's his dream as well.
Yeah, and he loved it.
Wow.
And when we started YouTube, he became my cameraman.
Wow.
That's Billy Mack, shout out.
Yeah.
And we trained, we got Super Bowl finals together. And that was just after COVID.
Yeah.
And the whole of COVID, we trained all day, every day.
Really?
But that's what training is. And then you have to be creative because there's no coaches in panna.
Yeah.
Obviously, I was lucky to be introduced by Yofi. And for the start stage there was, but then I'd kind of surpassed his experience, you know, in the sense that I was competing. And now we're in this new territory of, okay, how can I get more efficient? How can I be more effective? It's not just footwork. How do I apply this? And that's when my love of 11-a-side really tailored in, because I was preparing for a panna tournament by learning 11-a-side practices. Mm. You know, I wanted to be able to, you know, you've got to score, so you've got to pass. My short passing had to come really good, both feet. And then I took it to a technical level and I was like, okay, what can I do with my body so that I can block your leg as I'm shooting?
Yeah.
So that I can guarantee. And then it also comes into boxing. Like, it's all about range.
Yeah.
So can you reach me when you're tackling? How am I guaranteeing I'm in a position to get around you?
Wow.
And it's all preemptive.
So technically,
and laying traps.
Analyze that. Yeah.
So that was a lot of the training, was thinking about that. But one thing to add, as a wrap up of that, you don't have to train for an hour every day on your own. You don't.
Right.
For lots of it, I only did 20 minutes. But I made sure that I did 20 minutes every day.
Right.
And that was no matter what was going
just
on.
Just for repetition.
Uni exams,
and
school
stuff.
Exams.
Yeah.
Because I hated, say it'd been 3 days, I'd come back, first 20 minutes, I'd feel rusty.
Mm.
Then I get into the session. But I might already be frustrated because I'm thinking, why can't I do this? Why am I not feeling sharp? It was only 3 days. I hated that feeling so much that 20 minutes every day meant I never regressed.
Really?
And it just meant that as soon as I get on the ball, I feel sharp. Obviously, you got to warm up, but I felt like, you know what, I'm ready. And that's what 20 minutes every day did. It kept me thinking about it. I'd be at school, you know, meant to be revising for my exams or preparing. And instead, I'd be thinking, what can I do so that in those 20 minutes, because that's the only time span I've got, what can I do to make that the best 20 minutes of practice?
Wow.
And be efficient. So, okay, it was only 20 minutes, but I was thinking about it the whole day.
And it's the best use of the 20 minutes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that would be my one tip, is anyone that's trying to make the change from what they're doing at the moment to their passion or their hobby and really level up in that.
Mm.
If you're focused on it, you know, I had to get my schoolwork out of the way. I then went to uni. I never thought this would be my job.
Yeah.
Never believed it in a million years. I mean, super grateful for it. But there was a turning point where I was like, how do I turn my passion into my livelihood?
Yeah.
And what that was the focus. Okay, yes, I'm at work, I'm at school. But I was thinking about that and I was working on it. just getting this done. Meanwhile,
that's amazing that, and it's a good bit of advice about utilizing your time as well, because everyone says we're too busy for this and that, but actually you can always carve out 20 minutes in any day for that. I'm interested to know, how did your life change after, because you said you were the first British world panner champion ever. And obviously at that time you're building a YouTube audience as well. You're realizing it's a career path. It's 9 years in the making to get to that point. So when you became world champion, how did your life change?
So weirdly enough, it didn't.
Not at all.
Not really. World champion was just world champion. It's a very underground sport. So in the scene, I had respect, but I already had respect before that.
Yeah.
So I'd perform, you know, I'd got to semifinals. I'd done well before that. So weirdly enough, it didn't change too much. Brands, I was already very close with brands and work-wise. So social media-wise, I was already respected. The main thing that I have to deal with, I would say, is that I'm an athlete. For me, I'm an athlete. That's what I am. I live like an athlete. I eat like an athlete, sleep like an athlete. But I have to make content. And I'm a content creator professionally. I'm not a professional athlete because my job, I win the world championship. I don't make any money. So I have to be a content creator. And I have two jobs at once, really. And I love content creation for the sole purpose. The only reason I made Instagram, it's called Street Panner, not called Jack Downer, because it wasn't about me. It was about the sport. I made Instagram so that I could message people abroad for tips and tricks. And they gave them to me. And then they said, look, we've been teaching you. You got to post about it. All right, fair deals. So then I started posting. And then I got some, you know, I started to get noticed because what I did was very different. But that's why I love Instagram to this day, is because there's kids out there that are exactly like me. And I am that kid that was asking for advice. So I reply to every DM, every question about Panner. Every single one. And that's the only reason I continue to push it. Social media has never been about money for me or anything like this. Because if I wanted to earn money, I'd go work in the city banking or, you know, that's what I would do. And that's what I was going to do. I was taking philosophy at King's. I was going to do a conversion to law, MA at Oxford. I had everything planned in my head. But my passion took over. And that's why everything I do of content creation is passion.
You're quite a deep thinker in terms of how you analyze things and utilize time.
Massively, I respect
that. It's good. It's amazing that you say that, because there's not many people that would say becoming world champion had no impact on my life at all, because you're actually a content creator first in terms of your livelihood. And then becoming a world champion is great from a friends, family, honor, proud moment point of view. But because it's an underground sport, didn't actually change your life.
What was weird as well is I won it and everyone's kind of like, Jack won. Like, it was just normal. And it was, that was weird. Like, and it was actually even weirder on the second time when I won it. But I'll get onto that later. But it's an odd one, because there's so many things that I do, because I'm always pushing and trying to improve in certain aspects, that it becomes normal. And world champion was, that was deserved. Spent 9 years training for that. Deserved it. Move on. Next thing. But I didn't want to be like that. I wanted, it was my dream as a kid. It's just how used to working hard I got, that by the time I'd got there, I was already moving past it.
It's a good, it's a great way to look at it, and how you sort of look back on that. And it's probably helped you going forward as well.
100%.
I can't talk about your story without talking about what you think I'm about to mention, because you suffered a horrific injury. And I think it's fair to say your life changed completely. After this moment, if you don't mind talking about it, could you just tell us exactly what happened?
So it was, I think it was the end of May, June. So Panner World Champ season's around August.
So you become world champion this time?
I'd already been world champ.
Bit of a profile on social media. Life's going great.
Going really well. And just moved into London with two of my best friends. Billy, one of them, Jono, the other. And we're there. We've got loads of massive plans coming up. But I'd... we had Panner tournaments coming up. I was really fit for them and I wanted to win them. And I was excited for that. And then Billy said he's got a match, charity match, Content Ballers, TikTok one. And he was playing in goal and it was in Dorking. And I was going to go.
It's near me,
I was going to go watch. But as I was going, I thought, I might as well play. I might as well play. They'll have me in. So I wasn't going to play, but I thought I will play. And then Bill was in goal. I went left wing and everyone was super rowdy. Like really up for the match, and I was thinking, this is a little bit, okay, it's a charity match, but like, I'm not.
I've played a few of them, they are competitive.
So I stayed left wing. And I said to Bill, like, just pass it to the left back, pass it to me. And then I don't need it for the first 10 minutes. So everyone was playing and everyone was getting tired. And I thought, all right, now I'll start getting the ball. So I get the ball, you know, I rainbow flicked someone on the edge of the box, nutmegged someone. And then the goalkeeper on their team, he dropped it and I kicked it in. And he was very angry. And then we kept trying to pass it to left back, but they'd missed the ball.
Yeah.
So it couldn't come to, like, they'd literally miss it. And I was like, oh my days. So I said to Bill, just long it over the top.
Yeah, route one.
And there was one where he pinged it over. I controlled it on my shoulder and that made the, I was sick. I was having a good, I was starting to enjoy it now. And then long ball over the top and I'm running and it's there. I've just gone too far for it. All right, now for this one, we'll get it. I'll get the goal. Long ball over the top. I'm running. I see the keeper out of the box. I don't think anything of it. I'm thinking, why is he out of the box though? Mm. And I think he's going to head it. And then I look at him again. I think he's not heading it. Then the defender came across me and I thought he must have stepped back. So I'm still sprinting, looking at the ball. Boom. Goalkeeper's knee straight through my stomach. He didn't head the ball. He didn't punch it. He was outside the box.
Yeah.
He just decided to knee me.
Right.
16 stone through my abdomen. At that exact moment, I fell to the floor. You know when you're winded and you can't breathe? I had it many times. And this was completely different.
Was it?
Was it? That times 100.
So you knew straight away it was a serious injury?
No, immediately, because I couldn't breathe. So I was on the floor and I tried to breathe. Obviously, I was just sprinting as well, so I needed to breathe. And I couldn't breathe and I was trying to breathe and I thought, you know, you're winded, Jack, relax. And then 5, 6, 7, I'm thinking, I can't breathe. Gets to about 10 seconds. I think then the only thought that came into my head, because I'm trying to be rational, the only thought that came into my head is I'm dying. Like I'm dying.
You
like
straight away you were dying.
So the keeper was just about to walk off and I grabbed his hand. As much as I disliked him at the time, obviously. I grabbed his hand because I didn't want to die alone. And that was the only feeling I had for, and I took a breath after 40 seconds. Meanwhile, the commentator's telling them, saying on stream that I need some tiger balm or an ice bath or something.
Oh, so people around you didn't think it was a serious issue?
No. People around me are mocking me. But at the time I was 100% dying. So despite this, I then get off the pitch and shout out to some of the players that helped, like Forms, Olivia, there was a lot of Simon, there were lots of nice people there that helped. And they wanted me to stay and watch the match. And I was like, no, I'm not staying, I'm going. Mm. And I said, can you call an ambulance? As I'm kind of hobbling around to changing rooms, there's no medic on site. There's no ambulance coming. They say, no, it's not severe enough. They're busy on something else. Not severe enough. I should have spoke on the phone. Mm. So then I call a taxi. There's two hospitals.
You called a taxi at this point?
Two hospitals close by. The taxi took 50 minutes to arrive. It was an hour and a half journey to get to the hospital, and it was a bumpy road.
Yeah.
At this point, I was with my girlfriend at the time, and massive shout out to her. Like, you know, we got through that. And I was in that taxi for an hour and a half on these bumpy roads. At that point, I had a litre and a half of blood in my abdomen, but we didn't know it.
A litre and a half of blood in your abdomen?
My liver had completely exploded. So a grade 5 liver laceration. A grade 2 is like you got stabbed. A grade 3 is like you got shot. Grade 5, they explained to me, is it just completely exploded.
Yeah, do you know what? I actually Googled this before we came in. And that's not an exaggeration.
No, yeah.
The way to,
that's what the surgeon
in
told
sort of
me.
Layman's terms, I suppose they refer to it. It's like your liver exploding inside of you.
One of the surgeons said to me, he said, I guess if you took your liver, he was a young lad.
Yeah. This is what the surgeon said to you.
Yeah, very talented guy, a young guy. We were quite friends in ICU. He wasn't a surgeon, he was in ICU. He said, I guess if you laid your liver on the floor and you hit it with a sledgehammer and it, that's probably what it was. Now, everyone in the hospital thought I was in a car crash. They couldn't believe it was football. But anyway, at that point, I called my mum because I always call my mum when something goes wrong. And she's a nurse and she's talking. I thought, oh yeah, this is bad because we normally have quite quick phone calls.
Yeah.
And she was trying to keep me awake because she was convinced if I fell asleep in the car, I'd die.
In the taxi, this is?
Yeah, in the taxi. I got out and walked into the A&E. I said, look, I'm just about to talk at the desk and a lady cuts in front of me, old lady. She's got a bruise from her COVID jab that she wants checked. And she cuts in front of me. I think, oh my days, I'm dying here. But you know, my girlfriend's really scared, so I'm not trying to be scared. I felt bad for even squeezing her hand because it hurt. So I was just like, anyway, when I was in the waiting room, I then blacked out. And the old lady actually said to everyone that I was faking it, which was kind of crazy, but obviously I wasn't. Yeah. After 7 hours, I was seen. Seven hours I was operated on.
So you had a grade 5 liver laceration and were close to death and you waited 7 hours because they didn't know that
they
at the time.
They didn't know, because they thought I was young, they thought I had a cracked rib and I was like, this isn't
but
a
to be fair,
rib.
They didn't know that at the time.
No, they didn't know. Yeah, they didn't know.
But for you, the pain you must have been in.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. And they put me on this machine where they were I still watched, my mate was in goal for the penalty shootout. I still watched it.
Yeah,
the base penalties, and he won it. So I was well happy.
That's the main thing there.
I put that on my Instagram as well. And then it got really bad. And the last thing that I remember is my girlfriend at the time was there, and I kind of just came back around to consciousness, and I'm just about to be wheeled away, and she's crying. I'm in recess at this point. And I said, hey, don't worry about it. Like, yeah. I'm strong. I'll be fine.
Yeah.
Look after yourself. I'll see you in a bit. I love you loads. That was it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that could have been the biggest lie I'd ever told.
Yeah.
But I genuinely believed I'd be fine. Then I come back round to consciousness. I'm in a lift on the bed. Everyone's standing around me, morbid. All the surgeons, they're just taking me to where they're going to operate on me. And I thought, man, I need to try and raise the mood here. So I start trying to make a joke about how I've never been in a lift with a bed. And they're like, hey, it was a terrible joke. But, you know, they were just looking at me like, yeah. And I was like, I knew then they thought I was going to die.
Really?
And then...
So this is after you had a scan, was it, when they realised the
severity
scans,
of it? Yeah, lots of scans.
So once you had the scan, they realised that they needed to operate straight away?
Oh, straight away. They all came back.
And that's when... Things got amplified
massively. I went to resus, and that's when I was in and out of consciousness as well. And then the last thing I remember is I was in the operation room, and they're doing that thing where you have to count down from 10, you're going to sleep, and they're just relaxed. We're going to put you to sleep. And I was like, yeah, yeah, come on. I remember saying, like, do your job, let's go. Like, I was rushing it. And 10, 9, 8, I'm still there. 7, 6, 5, I'm still looking at them. It's just relax. 3, 2, 1. One guy goes, that's enough to take down a horse. And then I went.
Right.
But my body must have been so trying to survive fighting it.
Wow.
That it didn't even want to go to sleep.
Wow.
In the awakened world, not my world, where now I'm in operation, they were struggling to keep me alive. They'd packed my liver. It was bleeding, lots of blood. I think I don't want to get this wrong, but it's so many numbers in relation to this story. I think I had if there's 7 pints of blood in your body, I got given 11, something like that. That was the proportion. So I had more than the whole amount. All of the blood in my body, I've been given 11 pints in total to keep me alive. So there was a lot of blood loss. And they were trying to package, this is the best way I can explain it, package my liver together. And they were putting paper around it and trying to minimize the bleeding. They were trying to operate, but they realized they couldn't do it. They couldn't save me. And the head surgeon there, he was taught by one of the best liver surgeons in Europe. And he called him and he said, look, we need you to save this boy. Like, can we send him to you? And he said, yeah. So he, on a Sunday evening, he opened up King's Hospital and I was being transferred there immediately. Mm. They tried to transfer me by helicopter, as they wanted to, but the vibrations they said would kill me. So they sent me with 2 ambulances and they sent me there. As they were sending me out of the hospital, I had a full standing, all staff in the hospital were standing as I was wheeled out, like my eyes taped shut. It looked like I was dead and my family saw that. And that's the most distressing thing for them because they were convinced and they had to say goodbye to me. As the travel, because they were convinced that in the travel, I'd probably die. In the travel, my blood pressure went completely and I somehow survived it. But what was crazy, and one of the reasons why, so when we talk about probabilities, what's the chance of survival here? Well, it's zero, really. And how can I substantiate that comment? Well, there's something called a caudate lobe. I don't know what this does, but I know it's right next to my arteries in my liver and yours. So it's right there.
Yeah.
1 millimeter difference, if the point of impact was 1 millimeter difference, I'd have died immediately. Because that's where the artery is.
Millimeter.
Instead, it was upon my liver and my caudate lobe. My caudate lobe avulsed, landed somewhere else. They had to reattach that. It's necessary for life. I don't know what it does.
Right.
And from what I was told, in 2017 was the first successful reattachment of this caudate lobe. So it's a difficult procedure. Wow. That's why I was being transferred.
Yeah.
So now I'm in this induced coma. I get to the hospital, he's there, raining. He's ready to take me in, open me up, surgery.
One
let's
of the best
go.
Surgeons going for this.
He's ready for this.
Yeah.
He opens me up, he looks at me, it's packaged. He closes me up and he leaves me for 3 days in a coma. Why? My caudate lobe in transit had attached itself. It's a miracle.
Wow.
And they're still looking at that today. Which
they don't
cool.
know how or why that happened.
Logically, they packed it and they put it in the right place and they hoped that maybe the blood could do something, but they were ready to operate.
Mm.
The blood congealed and it
attached.
So he's left me there for a couple of days. I was in ICU for 14 days in total.
14 days?
Yeah, it was like in a basement. There was no natural light. Mm. I was on morphine, opium, ketamine. I was fully intubated, which meant that my lungs were being operated for. Yeah. At one point when it seemed like things were better, it turns out I couldn't breathe whilst I was awake. I was saying to everyone, I can't breathe. This was just before the intubation. And, turns out that my lungs were filling with fluid, infection, blood, pus, and they had to take 500 milliliters of blood out of each lung. So I was drowning whilst I was awake. They had to stab through my ribs and get that out. Then I was meant at that point, I was really bad. They almost put me onto a life support machine. They said if that was turned on, there was probably about a 20% chance of me then getting off that. So the battle was still going.
Wow.
I'd lost the ability to move. So I'd been in the bed, everything had wasted away. I went in at 75 kg, I came out at 59 kg. All my muscle was gone, I had no body fat before. I couldn't lift my hands, I couldn't talk because of the intubation. Then my dad had just got back from, it was COVID times. Yeah. So 1 hour a day I was allowed to see people. So that was when, you know, allowed free visitors. So I have my sister, my girlfriend at the time, my mum, my other sister, some of my friends. And then my dad got back from China. I hadn't seen him for a year and a half. And then the first time I'd seen him was when they'd removed the intubation. And at that point, this is a breathing machine that goes to your lungs. You have to cough and you have to remove it. And at that point, I was 100% convinced I was going to die. Logically, I wasn't. Yeah. But they were actually concerned because my lungs were very weak and they didn't know they didn't know when to take it out, but they needed to because I kept getting infections as a result of it. And anyway, I survived that, saw dad. But what's even crazy and why that's even heightened, and I don't want to digress too much on this topic, but I'll bring it up, is I was in a coma, right? I was technically in two. I was induced into two comas. First one, the 3-day one. Second one, the 1-day one. But when you're in hospital, people don't tell you things. Mm. On the final day, they said, Jack, we don't think you're going to die. Great. Until that, I don't get told anything because they don't know I'm going to survive. And also, I'm with two nurses in the ICU. 23 hours a day, I'm on my own with those nurses. Mm. But these nurses weren't speaking English around me because that wasn't their natural language, and that's fine, all good.
Yeah.
But for me, it was really confusing because I couldn't say anything because I was intubated.
And you're not knowing what they're saying.
I don't know what they're saying. Yeah. And also, on top of that, they thought I had brain damage. That's why they weren't necessarily speaking to me in English. They did try to, but also I'm hallucinating. I'm on morphine, opium, ketamine.
Yeah.
And this is just mad. I don't know where I am. I don't know why I'm there for this state of, let's say, 6 days really bad.
Yeah.
And I'd just been in a coma. And that's all I knew. And no one told me anything until I got out and I was in the car with my dad and I was talking and I was saying, like, look, I'm going to tell you what I think's happened this last 2 weeks. And can you just listen and then tell me if I was right? Because I just have this crazy experience.
Don't know. Yeah.
There was, you know, at one point I'd wake up, I've removed all the wires from my arm, I'm trying to escape the hospital.
Mm.
Why? Just because you're on, you know, I didn't believe in lots of it. But anyway, so I said, look, I think I was in a coma for 3 days. And actually, the best way to explain this, I had a knowledge of what was going on around me when I was in the coma. How? So when you're in a coma, you can think. And this is one of the things that I think is most fascinating. And I was essentially in a dream in this coma. Mm. And it was a dream that I couldn't control. Sometimes I'm in a dream and I'm aware. Oh,
you can remember this dream when you're in the coma.
This is the most harrowing thing about it all. It all sounds kind of probably quite tough, but this was the worst thing. This was the hardest thing to come over. I was in a dream, and normally if I'm in a dream, maybe I can think, this is a dream, or I'm about to die. And I think, oh, don't worry, I'll wake up, and I wake up.
Mm.
In this dream, I woke up in a hospital bed. Bearing in mind, I hadn't been in the hospital bed per se, only the operation one. I woke up in a hospital bed. A nurse turned around and said, Jack, it's time for your cough. Okay, what's this? That's the intubation, when you cough up fluid that's on your lungs. And you get ready, you test how strong your lungs are to be able to see if you can remove the intubation. I didn't know I had this at the time.
Mm.
Anyway, in my dream, she said, it's time for your cough. Okay. So she blows air into it. It's a really horrible procedure. Ooh,
yeah.
And you feel like this. Then I cough, but then I died. In the dream, I died. And it went pitch black. And then what I call eyelid black. So if you close your eyes, it's black, but it's not fully black. I can see the light.
Yeah.
Then it went to that. So it's pitch black, then eyelid black. I'm in the room. Okay. I open my eyes. She turns around. Jack, it's time for your cough. I die. Pitch black, eyelid black. This goes on and on. And on, and I die, and I die, and I die, and I die, and it's this surge in pain through my whole body, boom, pitch black. Now I'm getting pretty tired of this, and I'm there, laying there, and I'm thinking, I'm not opening my damn eyes. I'm not doing it. So then what does she do? She peels them up, shines a light on them. I know you're there, cough, boom, dead. Oh, okay, I know this game. So then she shines a light on, but I'm looking up. Ha, can't wake me up now. And then she pinches my thumb. I go, oh, then she gets me. I thought, all right, fine, cough, dead. Pain, pitch black, eyelid black. Now she's going to shine the light at me. I'm looking up. She pinches my thumb. I thought, nah, I'm firming it. That doesn't hurt. Then she slaps me. I wake up. Oh, my days. Then the next one, she pinches my thumb. She slaps me. She shines the light in my eyes. I'm looking up. She still hasn't woken me up. I'm still tricking her in my eyes. Then she's shouting at me, Jack, 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 you need to wake up. Jack, you need to wake up. Respond, respond. And you know, I think, you know what? Stuff this. I'm too competitive for this. I'm not having this lady, whoever she is, doing this to me. So I get up, I push her, and then it goes, I kid you not, it goes level one in the corner. What? And I run, and then another doctor runs at me, and I dodge him, level two. And then 50, this is where it gets really weird. I mean, it's weird already, right?
And this is your memory of the coma.
This is my 100% reality. There was no changing it. This, if I told you to look straight ahead at that white wall for 10 minutes, within 30 seconds, you'll be thinking, what am I having for dinner later? What? You're not looking at it. You have to look at it. Think nothing but the white wall. That is this dream. I had no... Normally, I have a voice in my head.
Yeah.
Like if I said,
so this is going on for real this is, in your, whilst you're in the coma.
There's nothing I can do about it.
Right.
There's nothing. Like, I can't even reflect on it. Wow. I'm just simulated to live this. I can't. I've tried to think about everything, to wake up, to do something else. I can't. And at this point, 50 Cent appeared and told me, hustle or die. What the
50
hell?
Cent, 50 the rapper.
Cent, the rapper, appeared. I've actually met him since. It was legendary. And he knows about the story. It was super cool. Anyway, yeah, I'd met him at that point. I thought, what? I thought, well, too right with Hustle or Die. The only album I ever listened to when I was driving back and forth to my dad's house was Get Rich or Die Trying, 50 Cent. Yeah, so I thought, you know, game on.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that's what I'm on. Then I get to level 3. Then I get caught. They kill me. Then I start again, get to level 4, get caught, kill me. I was progressing though, but I had to remember, like, dodge this one, run around that way. It was really complicated trying to escape this hospital. And I'm getting to about level 20 and I get stuck. Mm. Then what happens? My mum is sitting beside me. She says, I'll help you. What? She'll help. So then with her help, I get to about level 50, but then she can't help anymore. Mm. Then I get to about level 60 on my own, I get stuck again. Then my girlfriend at the time came in and she helps me get to like level 70. And then she can't help me anymore. And then fine, it makes sense, you know, who I was dating at the time. And then my mum. But then what was really peculiar, and it only because, like, don't get me wrong, Rodea is one of my closest friends. Mm. I work with him a lot in football. But he wasn't, like, in the room, you know, in my eye. Like, you know, I went to the hospital with those people. And anyway, Rodea comes in. Mm. And he helps me right at the end, kind of getting almost towards level 100. And... I really appreciated it. I thought, great. And then I had to get to, in the end, I had to get to like level 120, which was just a mick take because I thought it would end at 100. Anyway, it did end eventually. Yeah. And I got to the top of the hospital and I ended up jumping on a helicopter with 50 Cent. It flew away and I woke up.
Wow.
Mad. Anyway, at this point, during it, you know, I've had to run this level. Every time you lose, I feel in excruciating pain.
Yeah.
And I said, it felt like it was 3 days. Of pure dying.
Yeah.
And that's when I came out to my dad. I said, look, I think I was in a coma for 3 days. He said, really? I said, yeah, I think I was in a coma for 3 days because it felt that long.
Yeah.
And first person that visited me was my mum. Mm. Then it was Iz. Then it was Rodea. At the point where I was really dying, they visited me. They were sent in to talk to me, to help. Wow. And at the point where I was really close to dying, obviously another one of these points, they sent my mum in to shout at me. To get a response, they sent my girlfriend in and they sent Rodea in because that was the one day that he visited. And I knew this was at the worst.
And they were the three people that appeared in your dream during the coma.
But when did they appear? They appeared when I was stuck.
Wow.
And when I was stuck on a level and I'd kept dying, I would lay there. It's gone pitch black. It would go eyelid black. And I wanted it to remain pitch black. I didn't want to be there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'd kept dying. I just wanted to fade away and stop. And I could sense it. And there were two things that kept me alive. One, hope, and that hope was from my family and friends and loved ones. And two, an insane competitiveness that I wanted to complete this, that I couldn't stop now, despite how much hurt. And then what did they do when I was close to dying? They pinched my thumb, they pinched my cheek, they shouted at me.
So all of that that you were visualizing was actually happening.
And I mentioned that they thought I had brain damage. Why? It's because every time they shined the light in my eyes, we were looking up. It wasn't because of brain damage, it was because I was trying to hide from them. Mm. And that came across in real life. So there's a direct link between comas and like being in the coma and the room, essentially. Wow. So anyone that's ever, you know, one of their loved ones or someone they know is in a coma, 100% the effort you put in to trying to reach them in that room will not be in vain. You might not get a physical response. They might not be able to articulate it afterwards.
Yeah.
But genuinely without that, I'm convinced I'd be dead. Or I'd have survived just through some sheer competitiveness, but what was I competing for?
Wow.
For me, everything I've ever done, my whole life, I've never cared about money, followers. It's just security for me and my family. That's it. And to make them proud. That's everything. And so that's what I compete for. Mm. And that doesn't change. And that was emulated there.
That's an amazing story, that. And like, thank you for sharing. As I say, I'm sure like people that may have experienced something or have people that go through that, it's a great story. It's exactly that to help. And it's like, how vivid you, I don't want to call it a dream if you're in a coma, but I suppose it is a dream, but also there's elements of reality if those three people are the three people that were by your bedside. So in terms of how serious it was then, from people saying get up and play on and not being taken seriously, you were given a 20% chance of survival That once was just, the operation was starting.
Yeah, yeah, that was just from my lung infection.
But prior to that, it was even lower, you were
well,
saying?
The head surgeon, I went back to check on him. Him to check on me, technically.
Yeah.
And he's fine, thankfully.
Around, yeah.
Big up to tell. But he said to me, Jack, anyone else on the pitch would have died.
Really?
And I said, okay. I said, come on, man. You know what I'm like. I said, come on, man. What if I was playing with Ronaldo? They said, yeah, he'd be dead. And I said, then why did I survive? They said, we don't know. But let's, really? You know, I'm not saying that I'm not fitter than Ronaldo, no way. But I had trained every day. I slept. I'd live like an athlete, never smoked, didn't drink. Like any of those things, if I'd done them, I'd be dead. Because it was that close to war. So
how, in terms of the rehab then afterwards, you had a 9-month period where...
9 months of
rehab. What did you have to learn to do again?
So they said it would take me 3 months to be able to walk for 5 minutes, fitness-wise, because I had full body atrophy. So all of my muscles were gone. And then on top of that, I couldn't lift anything heavy for 9 months and so on. And it was just a risk of hernias. And I had 92 staples in my this scar.
Can we have a look at that?
Yeah. There's actually two. So the first one starts here and goes to there. And then the second one is there to there.
Wow, 92 staples you had there.
So I did the 9 months rehab.
And was that learning how to walk again?
Yeah, so primarily, I actually
pick up objects, fingers, toes.
That was okay. It was mainly just balance. Like, the weirdest thing to explain was I could only walk in one speed. You know, like when there's a couple of steps and you kind of skip up a couple of steps?
Yeah, yeah.
I couldn't accelerate. The speed that I moved was just, I had no power to move any quicker.
How was that mentally for you that period? That must have been
ridiculously debilitating. I went into that about to, in my eyes, win another world championship. Mm. And I came out. Now everything's reset. Everything I'd worked for, I didn't know if I'd be able to play football again. I didn't know any contact, if I'd be okay. Mm. But the worst thing for me, it wasn't about me. I wasn't thinking about me. I was thinking about everyone around me. My mum's a nurse. She couldn't go back to work because
she's looking after you.
PTSD from what she's me in hospital.
Right.
My dad was teaching in China. He came back to see me. Couldn't go back to China because of COVID. He lost his job. My partner at the time, she had a really good job opportunity, but she didn't take it because she stayed with me in hospital. Mm. My sisters were, you know, everyone needed therapy as well.
Did they?
I was just about to be the Euros. I had loads of money that I was going to earn for work opportunities, but I couldn't earn anything. Wow. And now I have to spend my money trying to help everyone else, but I don't have any money because my savings, I knew I was going to earn a lot of money. So I put my savings at the time into investments, which ironically did terrible. So I came out, I had no money. At one point I had £600 in my bank account and yet I'm employing people. I can't work because, and also like, I can't get money from my family. Like I'm the one that helps them out if there's a problem.
Yeah.
There's no that's lifeline really
tough,
for me.
Tough for you, yeah.
So I'm there with £600 and I can't tell anyone because, everyone relies on me and the ship will sink. And I'm the one that's crippled. I'm the one that's in the bed. So I got to get to work. So I did. But like, how?
Did you have therapy? You said your family had therapy dealing with that. Obviously you're the one that went through that. Did you ever need therapy?
I was contracted to have therapy, whatever that means. They said because of my age and what I've been through, like I need to have it medically. That was in ICU. They signed me up for that. I said, okay, if you want to sign me up for it. I said, but if there's someone else that will better use the resources, like feel free to give it to them. And they said, no, you've got to have it. I said, oh, no problem, I'll take it, thank you. And then by the time I'd actually, you know, within the next 5 days, they said no, like you don't need it. And I never got a message about it. And I actually walked in ICU because I refused to go to the toilet. You're in a bed bound, right? Going to the toilet's not pretty when they turn your digestive system on, which when they turn on, you can feel, which is super weird. Anyway, I had life, you know, there's a scar there. It's about the size of a pea. Mm. And that was a wire that went directly to my heart, which I felt them remove. Yeah. Like every one of my organs has been wired enough. Anyway, I would refuse to go to the toilet in the conditions. So I actually tricked a guy, a physio who was coming on the next day. And I said, look, it's time for me to walk. And he's like, no, you're meant to be sitting. And I was like, no, I did all that. It's time to walk. And I tricked him. And I actually walked to the toilet. And I said, where's the toilet? I'm walking to there. He said, there's no toilet on this ward because no one in ICU walks.
Wow.
And I said, where do you go to the toilet? I'm going there. And he said, okay. And as I was walking, I remember seeing the faces of the other doctors like...
Surprised, in amazement.
No, scared that if I fell, like it was done. And then on the way back, they all applauded me.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so that was
that must have been a proud moment.
Yeah,
I've seen videos actually of your rehab, you documenting, and it's actually your drive is incredible. I have to say, like from what you went through, and it's like so sorry to hear that, but your drive to get back and how quickly you got back. Your life then obviously got pretty positive quite quickly, didn't it? I mean, I fast forward to when you're in Qatar and you're filming with Neymar and Mbappe, Roberto Carlos, Bale. So, how did you get from that point of not being able to walk to then getting those opportunities?
I trained every day. Nothing changed there. And the training was different. Now it's
and you had a bit of a following anyway, so once could train, those opportunities came.
So I was training three times a day. Dad was with me full time. I decided that, you know what I'm going to do? I needed a purpose. Mm. I just came out. My life's just been shaken up. What do I need in panel? What do I need in social media? That's not why I live. Is that why I live? What's my life purpose? Mm. I need a question. Answer that now. Mm. I was so grateful to be alive. I was so grateful just to be in my home where my family was, just to sit in a bed that was mine. I was grateful for everything. And I was like, what can I do that's meaningful? Mm. And for me, my wallpaper has always been the picture of me and my dad when he won the world title. Mm. And I've always wanted to replicate that with me. Mm. And I imagined that with Panna. And I thought, you know what? Why am I doing it with Panna? I'm going to learn boxing. Mm. And I'm going to learn. I was so scared. I was scared of the T-shirt touching my guts.
Surely boxing's more dangerous than Panna.
100%. Immensely dangerous.
Yeah.
Immensely. But I was scared of aircon because the ICU was filtered. So I had to get over that. I was scared. I just didn't like it. And then I got over it. And then the last thing to get over was this. Pain. I thought, I'm not going to be scared of anything for the rest of my life. I'm so happy to be here. I'm going to make the most of everything. I'm going to do boxing. And I hadn't told Dad, but he didn't have a job. And I managed to get investment because he wouldn't take money from me. And thankfully, I didn't have it to give. But I got investment for £40,000 for him to stay for a year to coach me.
Right.
So then I go back and I say, Dad, you're going to coach me to box. We're going to fight on Misfits one day. And he looks at me like, you're mad.
And that's still your dream to this day.
And I said, here's the money.
Yeah.
And we did it. We trained for a whole year. Still my dream to this day.
Yeah.
I couldn't. Could we actualize it? Have I been on Misfits? No. But have I been trying? Yes.
Yeah.
And truth be told, progress is pretty slow in boxing when you don't have a core. So the first 9 months, I didn't really learn much, but we were training. You know what I mean?
It helped you the physical, your mental strength, all
that.
Any
money that I had on rehab and training with Dad, and it was me and Dad and Jono, and we were there, this team.
Yeah.
Jono's a sports therapist as well normally, so we were going through everything.
Yeah.
And then I got pretty fit, went out with Neymar. The opportunity came through Visit Qatar, and that was legendary. And there was, you know,
I remind us who was there: Neymar, Mbappe,
Donnarumma, Marquinhos on that.
And that's
day.
Still one of your most viewed. I think it's your most viewed video, isn't it?
Definitely.
And you nutmeg Neymar, which is an amazing story. You go from basically 10% chance of survival or whatever it was to nutmegging Neymar,
and that was within the 9 months.
Within nine months of what they said would be rehab. So what was that moment like when you're standing there up? So and you nutmeg one of the greatest players to ever play.
Yeah, he was one of my... I used to watch him all the time at Santos. And for me, what was crazy about it, everyone, content creators, you'd go to that opportunity of content ideas. Me and Jono, my best friend, who became a cameraman, we were there and we were like, I said to him, I've got no content ideas.
Really?
I'm just going to nutmeg Neymar. He said, really? I said, I'm going to nutmeg him.
You said, want to nutmeg him,
I said, no, I'm going to. And I said, this is how I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And the exact move that I hit him with, I told Jono I'd do.
And that was all legit. Just I've seen the video. Obviously,
that's not you saying
to him, oh, look, this would be great for a vid or that. No, that's all
man.
Legit. Yeah.
God.
No, I'm just
right,
for the,
right. One thing to add here. One thing to add here. Yes, you do. Never has it been fake. At 18, when I moved to London for uni, I went to every area where there was a good player.
Yeah.
And I challenged all of them in Panna. And anyone that said it was fake, I challenged them.
Yeah. Now that's why I mentioned. Yeah. I'm not saying it was, but you always get in any comment section.
You
don't.
So, but that's something that I try and stamp out. So Neymar, I didn't even ask him to play. I didn't ask him because I feel bad because I don't want to use Neymar for me, my gain. I'm just happy to be there.
Yeah.
I'd brought him gifts. I had everything. He's a legend. And I was just there, happy. We had
buzzing.
We had like 6 minutes of him or something between three of us. Andrew Henson, BN Freestyle, legends. No. And they were doing their thing and I was just watching, enjoying it. Then we did some 2v2. Me and Xavi Simmons versus Neymar and Hendo, I think. And then obviously I was trying to kind of play against Neymar a bit and he was backing off. And then there was a bit where I had the ball and he was like, okay, let's go. And everyone else stepped aside.
Amazing.
And it was just me v him. And then, I got him.
How did he react when you know
him? He taught me some choice words in Portuguese.
Did he? What was he? What did he say
off
camera?
But then off camera, he just
off camera, what was he like? Go on.
Oh, he was super chill. Such a nice guy. Just said, you know, like, nice one, man. I gave him some gifts. I said, you're a legend. Thank you for everything you've done for the sport.
Yeah.
You know, like, his flair. He's inspired millions and millions of players. And I just took the time to say thank you. And
I love that.
And, like, so much respect for him.
Yeah.
I will never not respect him because he knew. He knew what I could do.
And that's amazing for your channel.
He knew that it
wasn't
his game and he gave me that opportunity.
Yeah.
So that was legendary. And then I, you know, straight away I walked over, I was with Mbappe. I said to Mbappe, look, I don't even know what to do. I just did some shooting things with him. I couldn't even film anymore.
What was Mbappe like?
He's such a nice guy.
Yeah.
Such a nice guy.
I want to ask you about, remind us of some of the players that you've filmed. Go on, list them off. Mbappe, Neymar. It's your chance to name drop now.
Oh, okay. David Beckham.
Oh.
Xabi Alonso was my manager, his first managerial job for Tennis Squad FC. Pogba, coached by Frank Lampard. Who else we
Gareth
got?
Bale.
Gareth Bale. Plenty of times. He's
forgot
so
about
good.
Him.
Eden Hazard.
Wow.
So many amazing players.
Roberto Carlos.
Carlos.
So go on, out of all of them, best techers?
Paul Pogba.
Paul Pogba's got the best. Really?
Unbelievable.
So Paul Pogba, in your eyes, better technically than Neymar, Mbappe, Roberto Carlos, don't think Eden Hazard.
Better technically at Panna.
Right, okay.
Better technically
Paul
at Panna.
Paul Pogba number one.
Unbelievable, yeah. But loads of players have played Panna that you might not expect.
Wow.
Jan Vertonghen. You wouldn't expect him to be techie. He played.
Do you know what? I've played tech ball with Jan Vertonghen, and he was unreal.
There you go.
Well, so, why was Paul Pogba? What made him the goat of Panna then?
For me, he's ridiculously strong. Ridiculously strong. Like, you know, when someone puts your arm in, you think, "Oh, this is gonna be a tough day." He put his arm in me. I moved over there. He didn't even extend it. Yeah. I thought, "How do I even get into range?" And then on top of that, so far, so balanced, clever, and he's just a legend.
What about nicest player that you film with?
There's never been a player that I filmed with that I haven't thought was incredibly nice.
No, fair enough. Which is there one impressive. That stands out as being like really
Frank
warranted.
Lampard?
Yeah,
Frank
Lampard.
I had a nutmeg challenge, and he would pick people from the crowd. And I said, "Look, if I do this, you got to follow me back on Instagram." Years and years ago, I didn't have many followers. And he said, "Yeah, all right." My phone had died. He didn't even have his own phone on him, and he said, "Look, I'll get my agent to write it down." I thought, never going to happen. Yeah. 3 days later, he followed me. Then years later, we chat a little bit. Like, I just support him in what he does, and because he went into managing and so on, and he had a kid's book, and I commented on it. I said, "This looks great, I'm going to buy it," and I was going to buy it for my niece and nephew. He DM'd me straight away, said, "No, just give me your address."
That's
and
class.
And he hand-wrote a full inside to Bella, da-da-da-da, your uncle, all these lovely things about me and football, and to Noah. And then his handwriting is quite distinctive, it's quite curly, and the same handwriting was on the letter, and I was like on the envelope, and I was like, no way did Frank Lampard just
actually
post
it, yeah.
And that was surreal. Like, one of the nicest things ever.
That's amazing.
From anyone, yeah.
That's an amazing story. So your life then, you've had your injury, you've had 9 months of recovery.
Yeah.
You've then built your profile up. You've nutmegged Neymar. You've filmed with Mbappe,
world
Beckham, Lampard. Everything is geared towards world champs.
Yeah.
Then incredibly, you have another really serious injury
so
setback. Can you tell us about that?
Exactly 1 year on from my first injury. I hadn't played an 11-a-side match since. This was going to be my first 11-a-side match, Champions League final, the day after on the pitch.
Yeah, I know them, yeah.
I just fought Liverpool Madrid final.
Yeah.
I was out in Paris, just filmed with Bale that day.
Yeah.
Rio Ferdinand, Evra, unreal.
Yeah.
And then, essentially, I was at a dinner, celebratory dinner, day before, and I was explaining to one of my good friends that it was the first time I was going to play football again, and they didn't know about my injury. So I'd just gone through this whole process. It's quite a long story, 30 minutes. And then I said, "Oh, excuse me, Becky, like, I've got a bit of pain. I'm just going to go to the toilet." No, I didn't even tell her. I said, "Oh, I've just got to go to the toilet. I had a pain." And I was thinking, man, I really hope I'm sick. And then I said, "Oh, sorry, Becky, I'm going to have to go back." I said to Jono, like, "We've got to go in." "Oh, stay. I said, "No, I've got to go get a taxi back." I said, "Jono, go get some ibuprofen, please, obviously. And I never take painkillers."
Yeah.
And he was like, "Okay." So he's going to look for a pharmacy. Then I go to the hotel room, I start being sick. And I was sick every 5 minutes for 6 hours. So I was drinking water just to be sick. I was being uncontrollably sick.
Yeah.
And I knew from about, obviously, 10 minutes in, okay, I've got to go to the hospital. But did I want to? No. When you go to hospital, you lose all freedom. You're called a patient in the hospital because you need patience. And I didn't want to go for it again. It was torment.
Yeah.
But I was
mentally,
there in Paris.
I suppose, as well. That's
horrible.
Yeah.
No way. I'd got strong.
Yeah.
I was stronger than I'd ever been, faster than I'd ever been.
Yeah.
I'd got back. I was up.
Yeah.
And now I knew I had to go to the hospital. When I got there, I went the next day. And that's when I needed second surgery. The blood that had congealed that saved my life had then formed scar tissue and had somehow strangulated my intestine, and nothing was going to pass, and I was going to be sick until I died. So I had to have another operation.
Wow.
And full core surgery, so that's the second scar that was there. And I was in France, and obviously now my family come out to France to see me, to try and be there. I had this thing which was like goes up your nose and it clears your stomach.
Yeah.
I had that in for so long that like it got to the stage where I'd had full core surgery. The mucus that had built up was like flooding my lungs. So I had to cough, but I couldn't cough because I had core surgery. Every time I coughed, I had the staples in again. Then I got out eventually. I was in that hospital for 7 days, 8 days. Horrible. The same as the last one. Horrible. And nice hospital. Great staff. Like, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
Saved my life again.
Yeah.
Extremely grateful. But was it nice? No. Was it harrowing? Yeah. Yes. Then what was worse about this one is when I got out, I couldn't eat. Like, I tried to eat.
Yeah, you could.
And I would just be sick. And I'd be sick. And I'd be sick. And no one, they said, "Oh, yeah, in a couple of days, you'll be able to eat." They said, "You should be able to eat now." 3 weeks later, I still couldn't eat. The only thing I ate was jelly. It got to a stage where, at one point, my mum and dad were debating if they're not going to be together. So the fact that they were even together, that proves it's serious.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were debating if I should eat one egg or half an egg as my meal. And I was there losing weight again. Yeah. I came out about, I went in 75 kg again. I came out about 61. I went down to 59 again. Yeah. I was nothing. Yeah. And but thankfully, I could still move. Like, I was still better. I wasn't bedbound as such.
Yeah.
I had no energy. It was mentally ridiculous to be in the same place again, to have the same journey ahead of me, the same 9 months. They said it'd take me three months.
Was it another nine months?
Exact
for
same
this?
Surgery.
And can I just ask, this was, again, another life...
Same surgery, but same...
Same recovery,
through the core.
Was this another life-saving operation you had, as in if you hadn't have gone to hospital?
Yeah, no, I would have just been sick until I died. You would have died. Yeah. So that was
how mentally tough was that when you've come through... Almost cheated death, I've heard you say in articles. Yeah, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you said you were close to death the first time.
Yeah.
Then come through that to then your life's going so
dinner.
Great.
I was having dinner.
That step
back
again.
That's what was mad, is I was there having dinner.
How mentally tough
was that?
I wasn't
on the pitch. I was just eating dinner and now I'm suddenly going to die. That's why I'm doing boxing. You know what I mean? If I die in a ring, I die in a ring. Yeah, it's dangerous, but I die doing something.
Yeah.
Something that I believe is meaningful. Something others will be proud of. Something that if you looked at that, you see me in a ring, you see a foot-long scar.
Yeah.
You go, I don't know who he is, but he's done something.
Yeah.
And the worst case scenario, something bad happened, I'd never die in the ring. I'm too prepared. I'd never die. But imagine it did. You know, that's what everyone's scared of.
Yeah.
Well, I almost died having dinner. I'd rather go out doing something I thought was valiant. So that's my approach to it. And yeah, it was scary, but you have to own it. You have to move forward.
Yeah.
Like, I'm in that position. It's 9 months rehab. I can sit here and wallow.
Was it another
9 months
for rehab for this?
Wow. I can move forward or I can stay there. They said it would take me 3 months to walk again. And I didn't eat for the first 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So I was even weaker than that. And 2 months later was the World Champs and I went and I won.
Wow. So 2 months after your life-saving operation, you went to the World Champs and won it. I mean, how on earth did you do that?
I was fortunate that when I started playing football again, there's a panic cage in my hometown in Ramsgate. They put one in my hometown pitch. And I was recovering in my hometown. And I went there with Jono. And we just played a little, no contact, nothing. And I could still move my legs. I could still do it. It hadn't left. And I was thinking, oh, that's nice. Because I was expecting to fully have to relearn everything. I was like, this is good. This is better than last time. And then I needed the money badly this time as well. And I was like, oh, and then an influencer job came in. All I had to do was kick a ball for an advert. And I think it was with Harry Kane. And it was a really good fee. And they were giving it to me as a favor as well, I think. And super appreciative of that. And I looked at it. I can't remember the exact date, maybe like 8th of August. But at that time, it just, I can't do that. Why can't I do that? It's the World Champs. It's the same day. Super Bowl Panel World Champs was then. And I looked at it and I thought, ah, no. I'm going to take the job. And then kind of like, this is when I started training Panna. I didn't tell anyone. Like just me and Jono training a little bit and my dad. And then I was there. And I said to Ash, my manager, I said, I don't think I'm going to take the job. And he's like, really? It's a really good job. Like, you'll be able to do it. It's fine. Don't worry about it, Jack. Yeah. I said, no, I think I'm going to go to the Panna World Champs. And he's like, what?
So no one thought you could cheat?
And he was like, okay. Well, you do whatever you think's best, but be careful. And I was there. And in my eyes, if I went to the job, I was a content creator.
Yeah.
If I went to the World Champs, I was an athlete.
Wow.
If I went and lost, I was an athlete who lost.
Yeah.
If I went to the, I was an athlete.
And when you went to that, do you think back to those days in the hospital bed where you think, you used the word purpose earlier, I need a calling almost like your destiny.
This was the moment
was
for me.
To become world champion.
Yeah. And
so talk me through that
I lost a lot of money.
Did you?
Because I turned down the job. I booked it last minute. Flights that normally £50 were like 400. It was during that time where the prices went crazy.
Yeah.
Had to pay for me, the cameraman, missed out on the player's hotel because it had already fully booked. Yeah. So I had to stay in a different one. I didn't tell anyone that was even there. So I didn't go to the events to rock up. On the tournament day, I rocked up. That was it. And when I rocked up, I was convinced I was going to win. And there was one player there, my nemesis. He's a great friend of mine. His name's Fajani Safi, amazing player. Yeah. Also, in the meanwhile, I played him before my first injury.
Yeah,
And he knocked me out of the European champs 1-0.
Yeah.
Then I knocked him out of the world champs 1-0. There's never 1-0 games in Panama. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there was 2 years. In those 2 years, 18 months, I've been rehabbing, right? I've had a lot going on. In those 2 years, he turned full-time. Panna, social media, doing great, training a lot, even better than ever. He was there. I looked at him, I thought, that's the final. First game, I go in. I'm against a very good Belgian player. I lost. And I was like, oh my days, I lost in the group stage. I thought, this is ridiculous. I went, I sat on a chair and that was the first match of the whole tournament. Everyone just looked at me like, he's lost. He's not got it.
He's not got it.
And I was there and Jono didn't even want to come over to me because we were filming. He didn't even want to come over because he knew. And I said, no, it's fine. Okay. And I said, look, and the thing with me in training, I train so much, you have to lose. You have to lose.
When yeah,
you
train, yeah.
But I have a rule, I never lose twice.
Right.
Never twice. Jono might dribble around me once, never twice.
Twice, yeah.
Never, because, okay, that one, I wasn't concentrating. Now I'm concentrating. Even if I was concentrating.
Yeah.
Now I'm concentrating.
Yeah.
Never. So, and then what it was round robin style.
Right.
So in the group, you had to win 7 in a row. Oh my days. 7 in a row, I had no stamina.
Yeah.
And that meant that in about a minute, I was going to be playing that guy again.
Yeah.
Never twice, because he won all his games. I beat him.
Yeah.
I then won 7 in a row. I was then against the Czech champ, I beat him. I was then against an amazing player from France, I beat him. And then I was in the final against Fajani.
As you called it.
As I called it.
And it was a tight final, right?
It was a ridiculous final. I could have won it, the final seconds of extra time. I was 3-2 up, but then he tackled me somehow, scored. It went to extra time, extra 1 minute. He went 1-0 up. It got to a stage where it was 5-4. I had 3 seconds left to score, and I did. I made it 5-5. No, 6-6, actually, that score.
Yeah.
Then it was golden goal.
Yeah.
You start back-to-back, you turn.
Yeah, yeah.
And then whoever gets the ball gets possession.
Yeah,
it's not to give you an unfair advantage.
Yeah.
It's just to give you possession.
Yeah.
He turns, kicks it. Amazing play. Goes next to my goal. I know then at this point, he's not going to stop and give me a fist bump just for possession. He's going to take that ball and score, as you would in a World Champs final. Kind of against the rules, but it's street football. So at that point, I turn, I jump. I jump and I keep my legs together, but I put my heel in front of my shin and I block it with my shin. Hits the crossbar, bounces on the goal line, hits me again. I jump up my calf, hits it back onto the crossbar, and now the ball is fallen. And he's running at me.
Mm.
And I wait, and then I accelerate the ball into the floor because it's taking too long. And then it's rolling and it's spinning. It's like on this carpety floor, this tournament.
Mm.
And it's spinning and he's coming at me. And I'm waiting for him to get close. I don't want to touch it into him.
Mm.
And as he gets closer, I touch it around him, score. 7-6, won it.
And then you become world second champion time, for a second
Super
time.
Kind of world champion.
Having been through two life-saving operations and also being told that you might never be able to play again, learn to walk again. So just talk to me about what that moment was like for you and what the reaction was like from your friends and family. Because, Jack, that's an incredible story you've told. It's almost like... If you had that as a script for a movie, you wouldn't believe it was true. Do you know what I mean? Just talk to me about what that moment was like.
So the moment was obviously surreal. It was surreal in two ways. One, I was very proud. I was relieved. I was there with Jono. I was super happy to be there with him because he'd stayed by me this whole time. My dad was live streaming. Everyone was watching. That was great. But what was peculiar was the fact that it was almost underwhelming. I still felt like I deserved it. And it was done. And I was like, I can't believe I've done this, but what now?
Mm.
What's next? And if Jono wasn't there, truth be told, I wouldn't have even been happy. I'd have just been like, oh, did it, got the job done. Relieved. You know, I had a lot on the line.
Yeah.
And that's sad, really. Like, I think that's sad. I should have been so happy, but I wasn't. Like, everyone's like, oh, do you want to go out now? Like, no. Like, didn't. Back to work. Back to training. And at that point, truth be told, when I had the second surgery, the funding for my dad to stay and coach me was taken away. So dad had to go back to working in China.
Yeah.
My mum's still a nurse. Just work to be done.
Mm.
So I got back to work and I was training. I moved to Wales to train for boxing. And I've been training there and to have some space. I live next to a nature reserve. I'm running through the woods every day. I'm training 3 times a day, 16 times a week if I'm fully fit. There's a variety of injuries that I've had, ankle things.
Yeah.
You know, after full body atrophy, I tore my groin twice, hamstring once, like because the muscles aren't the same. But right now I'm feeling fitter than I've ever been, stronger than I've ever been.
Mate.
I'm running 5K in 17 minutes, although I don't train for that.
Wow.
Like, I'm feeling good and I'm ready to take it to the next stage. And what I want is one night in my career, which anyone can look at, which is seminal, which is McGregor versus Aldo, which is
Foreman
versus...
So I was going to ask that, what's next for Jack the Street Panner?
That's
and
what
boxing sounds like it's your ambition rather than Panner.
At the moment,
I
want to maintain Panner. I want to continue compete in Panner, continue to inspire. I've made
Do you still want to be another world champion?
100% that will happen. 100%. Without a doubt, need the hat trick.
Yeah,
but
okay.
For now, I can't employ my dad to coach me in Panna. I can't employ him to be my boxing coach. So as soon as I make money from boxing, he can have it. He can come back from China. He can stay with me. Teams back together.
Yeah.
That's my dream. Then got to get my mum to retire. Perfect.
Yeah.
And then with that, Panna all the way. But boxing's a side quest. Hopefully, you'll look at it. Everyone that will see me. They'll see what I've been through because you can see my scar. You can see it.
Literally.
And you think that's wrong. And it is. But you can do it if you push the levels. And everything's wrong until you prove it right. And like, that's what I want. I want to go out there, inspire, do what my dad did, be proud there. Hopefully others will be proud for me. And they will take that story and do it for themselves. I think that was impossible, but I want to do it now.
Yeah.
And then I'll go back to Panna. And then I'll, one day, who knows, I might even go pro in 11 aside at 30 just to prove the people that told me you at 14 that I was too old, that they were wrong.
Yeah.
It's not, it's all possible because right now I'm able to spend my days training.
Yeah.
Because I'm supported by social media and everyone that supports me has changed my life. And every, I am so grateful for that, that every second I have, I work. Mm. I work because I never want to feel like they support the wrong person. They follow the wrong person. Everyone that follows me, I hope that I give tenfold. And at the moment, I don't post as much because I'm training. And I want to make every single person that's ever supported me proud. Every single person that's allowed me to help my family, my friends. Mm. I have to repay that. And I'm doing that not through necessarily videos, but through excellence. Mm. That's what I aim at. Genuine greatness. I think I could have been a generational talent. Someone might have called me that once, but instead I picked a different sport that no one looks at.
Yeah.
And I'm aiming to show my talents in something that I have no right to be good at, which is boxing. I'd never done it before. I started with no core. I got reset and I'm aiming to come back. And I hope that when I go in that ring, win or lose, I know I'll be proud. I'll be more proud than when I won the world champs just stepping in because it's so scary.
Wow.
And it's been such a journey to get there. My dad will be in my corner and my best friends will be there and everyone will be front row and you better be there.
I'll be
as
there.
Well.
Yeah, I'll go
you
an
better
invite.
Be there. And everyone
I'd
that's
love
listening,
to.
I want to be there.
Yeah.
And this will be a moment to prove that I don't, okay, I'm going to win.
Mm.
I don't mind if I win or lose. This is a moment of overcoming. This is the moment that I think everyone should look at and go, yeah, Jack did it. Jack, that's Jack. That's he's strong.
That's powerful, mate.
And that's what I'm aiming for.
I love that.
And hopefully they take that for themselves.
Can I just say, it's been an absolute privilege to have you on. And I think your journey, I mean, I didn't even know, I've obviously done my research, but I didn't know the depth of what you've been through. And I think you deserve an unbelievable amount of love, respect from everyone watching, listening to this, for what you've overcome. And I think everyone should be so proud of what you've achieved, your journey. I feel like you're only getting started as well because the passion that you've got. Final 100%. Question, just want to know what advice you'd have for people that may be overcoming challenges because there's no one better than yourself who's overcome the biggest challenges.
Thank
so just advice you'd have for people, really.
I think one of the things I was lucky with is my challenge that I overcame, everyone gives me respect for.
Mm.
They look at it and they go, well, yeah, of course that's difficult. Mm. And then they give me respect. Lots of challenges that most people face feel just as harrowing mentally as what I went through physically, but it doesn't necessarily get the respect. So I would say just trust. If you are feeling bad, whatever it is, whatever the reason, because of this, because of that, it is never petty. Don't put it down.
Mm.
You know, believe in it, trust it, speak about it, and support each other. Because if you are feeling that bad, it doesn't matter if it's justified or not justified to the outside world.
Mm.
In your reality, it's real and it's bad. So like, that's what I'd say is like, never disregard your own feelings, and two, have an unwavering belief that you can do more.
Mm.
Anyone out there that has done something good, you can replicate. It just takes time. And that's what I've always, I learned how to learn and now I apply it to what I want to apply it to. And that is
that.
Persistent patience with focus.
Yeah.
And 20 minutes a day can change your life. It changed mine. So
I think it's the perfect note to end it, mate. Your story's been amazing.
Thank
I
you
can't wait to see you in the ring. Can't wait to see you three-time Panna champion content creation. Filming with some of the big players
Thank
again.
You so much.
Thank you for coming on, mate.
My
and
pleasure.
It's brilliant to sit down here.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows you don't want to sacrifice reliability for savings. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select LG appliances and purchase two or three select major appliances to get an additional 10% off. Save big on LG, America's most reliable line of home appliances at Lowe's. Based on independent reliability surveys 2021 to 2024 and select major appliances as compared to competing manufacturers offering full appliance lines. See associate for more details. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, exclusions apply. Valid 6/18 through 7/9.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.